What's up, guys? We are back, your High Street Freaks. We have just watched as close to on-field football as we're going to get for the next, 4 months. Is that right? 3 months? Is my math good? Whenever it is that Ohio State's back on the field, we got the spring game. It was more fake football than it usually is because it was all just thudded up, but it was what it was. Did you watch it live? Are you a live spring game freak? Were you tweeting through it? I don't even remember if you were posting through it on the boards or whatever.
I was posting through it. I woke up kind of hungover on Saturday at my buddy's birthday on Friday night. And yeah, pretty much just rolled over onto the couch and was hanging in there, firing it up. And watching it live. What did you think of that, Brock? Did you go live or were you watching on TV?
No, I was watching, or I did not go live. I was watching on TV.
Did you find the broadcast insightful or annoying?
It kind of went back and forth, but I think it was mostly annoying. It was.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was so like you're talking about the whole, like, just like asking coaches or like Ryan Day questions, like in the middle of the game and shit, like just all of that.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, I think it was just like, it was pretty clear that like, the coaches didn't want to do that necessarily. And like, I don't blame them one bit, but like, that feels like a thing that has to be the coach's idea. And like, if Urban wanted to do that and like wanted to like I could see like Urban Meyer when he was there, that being his idea and him being like, yeah, I'm just going to like talk to people like throughout the entire thing, like do take like a CEO mindset and like sell his program for an hour or whatever. But like Ryan Day just seemed rightfully annoyed that they're like asking him questions while he's like trying to yell at his quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there were a few interesting reactions out of it. Like I kind of enjoyed his response that Devin Brown touchdown. They asked to get the ball out fast enough. And he was like, yelling, no, him screaming at like a key.
That was great.
Good. There were a few things here and there. This is a bit interesting. Just like in general, something I know we've talked about a bunch, so we're not going to belabor the point today, but like just the continued hype over Jeremiah Smith, like no one being willing to like slow the train down at all, which just means like,
oh man,
they have complete and total confidence that he's the guy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like I tweeted about it, but like when they were asking Ryan Day about him, and his response was basically like, he said, I don't remember the exact quote, but I quoted it directly on my Twitter. It was like, he's not going to play a ton today. We're going to be very careful with him. And it's like, yo, this is an early enrollee freshman. Like he should still be in high school and you're treating him like he's a returning All-American. Like the reps that he played and shit, like that was comparable to like what they would have done or what they have done with like Marvin Harrison Jr., like Garrett Wilson. But like this is a returning, or this is a early enrollee freshman,
right? Which means they've seen everything they need to see, right?
Yeah, and
that's what we know from that. Yeah.
And also, he only took snaps with the ones, like those were the only snaps that he took. So, I think that answers everyone's question about is he going to start as a true freshman? Yeah, he's a starter. He's a starter right now. Like that, it's not changing.
No, it's only going up from here. Basically, the number's just going up. Is what's going to happen.
It's insane.
It's going to be more and more of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, even just the like, about it. Yeah. Even just the like, when they were in the red zone and Ryan Day's comments of like, yeah, if he has single coverage, just throw it to him. Like, just throw it to him. And like, he was like mad that it wasn't a good ball to him in single coverage. Cause he's like, if that ball is higher, like that's a touchdown. Like just the way that he talks, it's like he has the best wide receiver in college football already. And they're just like they threw two fades to this true freshman in against like the best corners in college football, by the way, too. Like some of the guys that he was like playing, like it was Denzel Burke that he was playing. Like Denzel Burke might be like one of the best corners in college football, if not like the best cover corner in college football right now. Like he would have been a day one, day two pick in the NFL draft if he left, and he is back. And this freshman is like beating him. Like, God, it's insane.
Routinely. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like he's a player we're going to run out of things to talk about with. It's just,
we already are. We talked about it before the podcast. We're like, yeah, I mean, it's par for the course. Like, we're just going to talk about Jeremiah Smith again. It's like, he hasn't even played a game.
It's crazy. Like, but what else can, like, how can we not talk about it? Every time he touches the field, he does something silly. Like, that game is probably the most boring thing we've seen out of him after all these months of practice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, he didn't play that much. They were very careful with him.
Right.
And it was like, And it was, it was very, that's one of those things where it was like, it was telling how little he played, because like, they clearly just did not want to get him hurt and wanted him to just like survive in advance till like fall camp. Like that's, I don't know. Very hilarious how they just like treated him the entire way. I cannot emphasize enough. They treated him like a returning All-American.
He's perfect, dude. He's just a fucking alien. Like it's, again, I think like the expectation, fair or unfair or whatever you want to call it, is that his, like his, basically the expectation for his freshman year are Marvin's junior year. Like that's the kind of guy we're talking about. Like it's a Larry Fitzgerald, Julio Jones type debut.
Yeah, no, 100%. He's going to only be limited by his quarterback. And I guess we can talk about quarterbacks now. Listen, there's not a lot that you can take away from a spring game. I get that it was absurdly windy and stuff like that too. Like, but I'm going to ask you anyway, what did you take away from, I don't know, just give me a quick rundown of your thoughts between all five quarterbacks.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I think Will Howard, probably the best of that group on Saturday. I don't think, like, no one blew my doors off. No one looked so bad. I'm like, well, they can't play here. I think in very limited reps, I was probably least impressed with Lincoln Keenholz, but that's, you know, kind of to be expected, just a timing thing. A feel thing, like it's like we talked about when he hits the competition level, you know, coming from essentially coming from, you know, where he did in South Dakota, like that's going to take an adjustment period. I thought Howard is like fine. He looked exactly like well, Howard always looks, just like his feet aren't really that good. Isn't really going to step into a throw correctly. He like his footwork's never that great, but he looks mobile and athletic, right. And he's big. Devin Brown. That's probably the best version of Devin Brown we've seen because he wasn't allowed to be hit. Of course, like, you know, if I don't know if there's like a fragility rating in NCAA football, but his is like 32. So, yeah, when Devin Brown can't be hit, he looks fun. That's fine. But I don't know. I don't really think much changed my opinion on that. Like, I think we talked about this before the spring game. Basically, my opinion can only be negatively altered by a spring game. It can't be positively altered that much. I thought Julian Sayin. Like, I guess the one downside you could find there is like he couldn't really throw into the wind very well, but he's also a freshman that we talked about needing to put on weight and get bigger. It doesn't have the biggest arm in the world, so that's fine, right? I'm not going to freak out about that.
He was like simultaneously, I see all of the hype. I completely get it. Like he looked like I saw the arm talent and I saw like the decision making, like the processing ability, but I also saw a true freshman and I was like, oh, okay, well, that's why, you know, like. He made the mistakes that true freshmen make, like those sort of like you got to grow into it, like you got to see more reps and stuff, like the I should be preparing for my high school prom sort of mistakes, but clearly has the talent. So it's like kind of answers my question of like, well, yeah, I mean, maybe this is the guy who could be ready to play by like week six or something like that, but probably at the beginning, it's not going to be him.
Yeah. Yeah, which is fine, right? And I mean, that's like, it's probably good for him to throw. It also doesn't like, it certainly doesn't invalidate the things that we heard all spring, right? But how in command he looks. But it's probably good to have a little bit of cold water thrown on what we were hearing about him because, I don't know, I mean, that was like fast and furious coming in, how much juice he was getting. So
yeah,
really good to have that dampened a little bit. I think it's a nice thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also thought Aaron Nolan looked pretty good. I think it's telling. I said this too. I think it's telling that Julian Sayin got in the mix like on the fourth drive and it took the second half until they got Aaron Nolan in. But he looked fine too. You know, he looked a bit, he ran the offense fine. Didn't make any like crucial mistakes or anything like that until he was obviously forcing the ball at the end of the game just to try to get one touchdown. Like I'm not going to knock him on that, but, yeah, he looked fine too. I think that's another one of those situations where like I clearly see why Julian Sayin is the way that he is, why he's up, you know, seems to be getting the reps, and I can read between the lines there and see who's ahead. But also like, yeah, he looked solid too.
Yeah. I think like this is a friend of the show, so I'm not going to name names, but there was a buddy of ours in the DMs, a group DM I'm in, that was basically saying, like, I don't know if Aaron Nolan's a Power 5 talent, which, like, I think is easy fucking to say about him just because Saiyan, like, you know, was taking over him.
Right.
And, like, sure, was there some concerning stuff about Air this preseason? Like, yeah, a little bit. Like, I'm a little, him, like, not going up to class early on. This was rumored or things like that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things out there you want to, like, kind of pull your collar out a little bit and, like, I think he probably took a step back his senior year. He lost every one of his weapons, a lot of his linemen too, but like he didn't develop the way you want senior year. There are some things you like to see him improve on, but I'm definitely not counting out Aaron Nolan, nor do I think he's a transfer candidate this year because neither of the freshmen are going to play anyway. So why not duke it out and see what happens over the next year?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he moves better than Julian Saiyan does. Like you saw it on like that last play when he kind of like shot to the sideline and then like scrambled back into the pocket and then made the throw that ended up being an interception. Like he looks more comfortable moving in and out of the pocket than Saiyan does is a freshman. Maybe that's just part of the RPO heavy and like option heavy offense that he played in Langston Hughes versus Saiyan was more of a pro style guy, but like, yeah, I mean, he certainly has, I don't think he's a bad quarterback. And like, the whole thing, my whole thing is like, I tweeted about like, it's pretty clear based on how these reps are going in the spring game that Julian Saiyan's ahead of Aaron Noland right now. Like that says a lot, but also like, I think that says more about Julian Saiyan than it does about Aaron Noland. It's very normal for a quarterback to come in with reality is that there's three guys who are battling for a starting spot over two freshmen that should still be in high school or early enrollee freshmen that could still be in high school. It's more abnormal for one of those freshmen to push for a starting spot or push to even be included in that competition than it is the other way around. Like with reps being split and stuff like that, and you basically getting no reps aside from like third string or, you know, with the threes or the twos and stuff like that. Like it is more abnormal to be Julian Saiyan than it is Aaron Noland. So like, the fact that he is fifth on the depth chart right now is not like that concerning. It's just like what you expect, even from a five-star guy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's like, look, like we said, like I still believe that if he has the right kind of you know, fall and like, you know, improves over the summer, of course, when they're not really practicing, but as we go into fall camp, like it's entirely possible to me that he could still be, you know, really pushing for that job at some point during the season. Like I wouldn't be shocked at all. I don't think any of us would. But it's not like the most likely outcome, right?
Yeah.
It's not maybe what we expect to happen. So yeah, I'm curious to see it play out. I definitely want to see more of him, but yeah, look, I will say, like, I know I've been pretty pessimistic, I think, relative to the consensus on Will Howard, and I still feel okay about my take. Like, I think my stance remains that he's a serviceable player who's not going to, like, blow my mind. I don't think he's going to do anything, like, special, but I think, like, if he's an above-average starting quarterback, if the rest of this team looks the way it should, which, you know, we're going to talk about the O-line in a bit, that needs to improve still. Everything else in the team is fucking tip-top shape. I'm cool with it. Like, that is the one position, as long as Will Howard's above average, if everything else is where he's expected to be, they can contend for a championship. I don't think you're going to get, like, Will Howard top 10 college quarterback. That's not going to happen.
No, it's not. It's not. And I, again, like you mentioned, like, I don't think they need that. I think he can, given the weapons around him and stuff like that, I think that he will be plenty good enough. You know, I mean, I'd argue one, I think we've come to the consensus. Like, I think we both believe that he's probably better than Kyle McCord, right? Do you think he's better than Kyle McCord? Okay. Yes. I think if Kyle McCord just ran it back with this team, that Ohio State would still have a chance to win a national title. And Kyle McCord is worse than Will Howard. So that's where I think
maybe the ways that Will Howard is worse, the ways that Kyle McCord is worse are more detrimental to a team like this. Like, I don't think Howard shits his pants and struggles to process against pressure at all. I think he has different problems, just like kind of sloppy footwork. Like, he's not the most accurate passer in the world, right? Like, I think he probably looks like, I think if we get, if Will Howard's about as good as DJ Uiagalelei, or a little bit better, I think that's good enough. But it's a different problem than what Kyle McCord has. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, like, all else equal too, he can lumber forward for a few yards too. And I think, like, that, I'm not going to say that he's like JT Barrett or like a running quarterback or anything like that, but like there is that element of like, he's just a big dude that like, if he scrambles or something goes wrong on a play, like where Kyle McCord really wasn't a mobile threat, or CJ Stroud hasn't really been a mobile threat over the years. Like, at least we've got a guy that can do something if you need him to scramble for 5 yards or something.
For sure. For sure.
So,
which is fair. Yeah. Yeah. I feel pretty good about like all things considering where he's at. Like I feel like I'm fine with the highest quarterback room. I think basically here's the thing. It's hard to kind of have one conversation after the other. If they're going to just rock with this O-line,
yeah,
I think there are like, there's a lot of conversation on Will Howard and how he can help cover up for an O-line because he's a good running threat. I don't think he's a great scrambler at all. I think if you're worried about your O-line, you're not going to improve it, which, by the way, if that's the way they act, that's fucking crazy. They're in already, like, they've spent so much money on this team assembling this roster. Why not just take one more step? That's so
great. Yeah.
If they get cheap now, and that's it, that either they get cheap or they get overconfident in what they have. That's fucking crazy. Nevertheless, not to distract myself, I guess I would say if the O-line's not going to be better than we're hoping for, then they need to, God, I don't even know. They need to basically, have gotten a guy who had a better pocket awareness and is more mobile in the pocket, not outside of it.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah. But let's talk about the offensive line, because we've talked around it enough. That is, as you mentioned, the one spot on this team, every position that I'm like, oh no. And it's not even the whole line. It is the right side specifically. The right guard and right tackle position have me a little nervous, a little bit nervous. And I just, I'm not really cool with it, because I know how Ohio State has lost games or played close games the past 3 years or so. And it's because they haven't had the offensive line talent. And like, it just makes me a little nervous. I personally don't think that there's any chance in hell that they can just roll with what they have on the right side of the offensive line. I don't see it. After what we saw in the spring game, after what we've seen with the rotations during practice, I don't know. I'm not convinced. I am not convinced that they have two guys that they feel comfortable on the right side of the line of scrimmage.
I agree with that. And I think the telltale way, like you said, you mentioned the rotation, like over the course of just the last week. So we're recording this Tuesday night, like basically the practices that have happened since the start of last week, we have heard that Luke Montgomery, Tegger Shibola, Josh Fryer, and Carson Hinsman have all taken first team reps at right guard during like scrimmage settings throughout the spring. That's crazy. Like the answer there tells me that like whatever's going on the right side, they don't have the answer either. I know they're saying that, like they're not committing like publicly to, we got to get better, we got to upgrade the way they have some other positions. If a clear upgrade comes available, it would be pretty shocking to me that they don't go get one. Like you have to do it. You simply have to. And like I will do. We're probably talking about this more in the premium episode. We're gonna talk more about transfer portal at length. I think some of the people that Ohio State fans want to go after in the portal, like people are just reading every name that enters the portal that has like, oh, he started 23 games in the Conference USA at right tackle. I love a G5 player. You can't just get any G5 player. You get Vic Cutler. You have to get ones who stand out and are good.
Yeah.
I think people are maybe losing sight of that part.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that's something we can be more aware of, and just making sure that we're getting the we're being conscientious about who we're asking for Ohio State to go get.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, they need an upgrade. That's part of it that way.
I think my thing too is I've said this before, and like maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe this is the wrong approach to take, and maybe there's a way to do this more discreetly. But it's always blown my mind that Ryan Day plays so coy when it comes to the transfer portal, when he could go out and say, like, look, like, at least give some sort of inclination that they're not stoked on the right side of the offensive line, and they're probably open to adding more talent. Because, like, if you're just out there saying, no, we like who we've got, like, we think we can rock with it. If somebody comes available, we'll look at it, obviously. But yeah, that's kind of the stance that he's taken. But if you go out there and you say, like, you know, we're kind of considering all our options, we would love to add somebody else, doesn't that just sound like a bat signal to, like, somebody else, like another, like, really good right tackle that is maybe at, like, another Power 5 team that's like, hey, yo.
Well, yeah, but you know who else is a bat signal to?
What, other teams? I guess that's true. Yeah, but, like, if you've already decided your players are bad and you want to get a new right tackle, like, what?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I guess it's the thing is, like, I don't think they're at the full level fire sale of like, oh fuck, these guys are dog shit.
Yeah.
We have to get anybody, but they're at like,
that's where they were last year, by the way. Right.
And they're at like, it's real risky. If we keep the guys we have, however, there's enough pieces like to be fair. Right. Like, I don't love Josh Fryer. I want to upgrade on Josh Fryer. I think I've been pretty vocal about Josh Fryer for the last, you know, year of this podcast. However, he was a slightly below average Big Ten tackle.
Yeah.
Who was also playing tackle for the first time. And was not helped by the fact that he had a quarterback who just his only response to any pressure was dropping further in the pocket, which is extra hard when Fryer is primarily a run blocking tackle.
Yeah.
And not someone with the quickest feet or the best like pairing between his hands and his feet.
Yeah.
I think Fryer can work, especially with Will Howard.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tegra Tshabola is a guard, but they just wasted a whole spring barely playing him there. And I think he's a clear starting right guard. But now you kind of have to do something. You have to get a player at one of those positions at this point.
Right. And I think my thing with Fryer, too, is like there were times it seems like they've kind of cooled on it a little bit. But there were times through the spring that Ryan Day was like, oh, he's the most improved player in the spring. Like he is like he looks really good, whatever. Like he praised him a few times. Maybe there's like peaks and valleys there. But I totally believe that. Like with how young he was and how like kind of inexperienced he was and like having one season under his belt. Yeah, I totally believe that he had a really good spring and could like if that's true, like if that's genuinely like what they're seeing and stuff like that, like that's great. I totally believe that. So I am with you on Fryer. My thing is like between Montgomery, Tshabola and Fryer, I think you have, God, I don't know. We've talked about this at length. Like, I don't see how they can make that offensive line work without at least one more transfer. Like, I just don't. Because like we've talked about it. I am not, you think that they could keep Josh Fryer and Tegra Tshabola? I don't think that. I think that unless they're both starting, that's the only way you're keeping both of them. And I don't really see that really working because that's not an ideal offensive line to just roll with Josh Fryer and Tegra Tshabola on the right side for me. I think
that happens is if they can't get anyone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if that happens, if Montgomery starts over either one of them, the other one's gone. Like if Montgomery starts at right guard or right tackle over one of those guys, the other one's gone. And so like, I think the only way you could preserve depth there is to have Tshabola and Montgomery start with, or sorry, Tshabola and Fryer start with Montgomery as your like sixth line or lineman backup. My ideal is probably get a transfer somewhere on the right side, whether it's guard or tackle, and then start either Tshabola or Fryer, either at guard or tackle. And then Montgomery is still your sixth guy. I don't see a realm of reality where Tshabola and Fryer are both back.
I think people on the beat misprescribed how good Luke Montgomery is right now.
Yeah.
I think he can play a bit, but I don't
think he's a year behind.
Like which is fine, right? Like
that's the real developmental track.
High school, we knew he like had to put on some weight while still keeping his feet. He also he wasn't playing like Paris Johnson, Donovan Jackson level of competition. I guess Donovan Jackson played smaller than Texas ball. But of like the top 100 guys they've signed in recent years, he wasn't playing the best competition in the world. He was like fucking Finley. Like, I don't know. I know it's Finley's what, D1 in Ohio, isn't it? One of the bigger, but it's not like they're playing in Northwestern Ohio.
Exactly.
Pretty comfortably like the worst. The Toledo Central is good, but that's a D4 school. Like Perrysburg is good. That's like your other big school in the region. St. John's is fine. There's not a lot of good talent that you have to play week in, week out the way you do in Cincy and Cleveland, and even, not as good as Columbus. It's on par with like Dayton. So, or Youngstown. So, I mean, like basically what I'm saying is like, there's not enough competition to push someone, especially when you're the biggest guy in the field, you can bully.
Well, and
definitively not the biggest guy in the field. Yeah.
And like with spring ball not really existing in Ohio either, and you not really having spring practices, like that's a whole nother, like there's a reason why some of the best like ready-made offensive linemen don't come from Ohio. Like the guys who are like ready to play as true freshmen, like you're missing out on entire like spring seasons of development that way. So I don't know. I think that he will be a good player, but what people don't really realize is like, or maybe aren't completely thinking through, is that like the normal developmental track for an offensive lineman is like that they're ready by year three. And so if he was playing, if you're asking him to be like the one of the best players on Ohio State's roster as an offensive lineman, like you're asking him to be really far ahead of schedule, even for like a really good offensive lineman. So I agree with you. I don't think that it's like a red flag that he's not necessarily ready to play, but it kind of doesn't really shock me either.
Yeah, agreed. It's fine. And like, I think Carson Hintzman also probably shouldn't be playing this year. Like, I think he obviously played last year. I know he's in his third year now. I don't think he looked ready. Like, I don't know. He didn't look close to ready, right? Like, so.
Well, there's a reason why they tried to recruit around him.
Right. And both of those guys came into college a bit light in the pants. And like, I've talked about Mick Marotti strength and conditioning a million fucking times on this podcast, on Twitter, on our website, on my other podcast, Flip in the Field, subscribe to meetupinfield.com. The biggest area of weakness, in my opinion, in Mick Marotti's training and methodology is that it doesn't emphasize maximal strength, doesn't emphasize speed strength, which are the most critical things for alignment. They don't work in the right rep ranges. And it like, it's okay for a wide receiver because rep ranges he works in can work for players outside or defensive backs. They don't really work for linemen where you have to beat someone's fucking head in the trenches. That's where he's weak. And I think that's like, I think that shows up when you see linemen. I know like, yeah, it's normal, quote unquote, for a lineman to wait until year three to play. But some of the guys they recruit aren't normal and they're still not looking that good until year three.
Yeah.
And like, you're not seeing an Amarius Mims or a J.C. Latham or a lot of those guys popping up the way you do at Alabama and Georgia and other programs that take that stuff more seriously.
I think part of that also is recruting too. Like, cause.
Yeah, of course. It goes hand in hand.
It goes hand in hand too, because like Paris Johnson Jr. did play immediately and he was ready to play immediately. And so like, to me, Paris Johnson Jr. is comparable to J.C. Latham. Whereas like you can't compare Luke Montgomery to those guys.
No, for sure. And I mean that I 100% get that, but I don't know, whatever. It's what can you do about it? I guess
all that to say, we're going to talk about like transfer options more on the premium podcast. But my take is that there is no way in hell that they don't get another transfer on the right side of the offensive line. I refuse to believe it will happen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I definitely get the perspective and I think that's really fair. I guess I just don't know. Like it's day one of the portal, right? But like no one's popped in yet where I'm like, yes, you have to go get that guy. There's two guys who are not in the portal yet from Louisville that I would like to get. And there were rumors about their NIL collapsing. And there was some report that that Marcelo guy from 247 had to withdraw because he apologized to Jeff Braum because he said he had bad reporting. But he basically said, oh, these guys are broke now. They're going to have six linemen hit the portal. There are two of those linemen I like. I like Monroe Mills. I like Jonathan Mendoza. They're transfers from Texas Tech and Yale, respectively. They're both players. Yeah. Are they like surefire 100% upgrades over Fryer? Maybe not, but they're equivalent players. You can move Fryer inside. That's fine.
Right. I think that's a win.
Yeah. And like that could work. But there's going to be other guys out there, I'm sure. The Marcus Bryant dude from SMU, I haven't heard anything about him. He was like announced he was going to the portal like a month ago.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some news about him. The kid from Colorado sucks. The kid from the portal from Louisville, the Ruben Unije kid, terrible.
Yeah.
Derek Graham from Troy, who visited in the winter. That's the pet project for a lot of people in the Ohio State beat this week, is that Derek Graham kid. He's bad. He's worse than Vic Cutler. He's really bad. By the way, Vic Cutler back in the
portal again. Transferring again. They should run it back.
Yeah.
Maybe he saw that they're struggling at right tackle or right guard. He's like, hey, I can play guard.
I can honestly, the strategy for why you take Vic Cutler is other linemen in the room look at him and be like, oh, this guy, I'm definitely a power five here at least. It improves their confidence, you know, by standing next to him. that's a good strategy. Yeah.
Yeah, I love
Ringer on every team.
Yeah. I loved my good friend Ramsey over at 11 Warriors wrote an article a few months ago of a program source that he asked about, like, once Vic Cutler arrived, he asked, like, how's Vic Cutler doing? He's like, oh, that kid, he's never going to play at Ohio State. And he was like, really? How do you know? Like, is his footwork bad or something? He's like, oh, no, I've never watched him play. I just saw him the other day, and there's not a chance that kid ever plays at Ohio State. Like, he doesn't look like he's going to play at Ohio State. So yeah, I love the thought.
To which I'm personally screaming to the heavens. No shit.
Yeah. I just love the fact that like a dude like who's just like tangentially kind of involved with the Ohio State program can just like look at a kid with no pads that hasn't stepped on the field and be like, well, that kid's never playing here.
Yeah. I mean, too many of those guys have come through in recent years. Too many of those guys.
Yeah.
The last, you know. I guess it always happens, but shit. Speaking of guys who could never play here, Cedric Hawkins hit the portal.
That's true. I don't have much to say about that. I
just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
It's just one of those guys that I said at the time, why'd we take him? And
that? Yeah. That was just simply an event that happened. Like, it's not really like there's no like follow-up discussion about that. It's just like, oh yeah, guy who is never going to play at Ohio State is actually not going to play at Ohio State because he's going elsewhere. So,
duh, is my
yeah, that's sad. I guess we can talk about the defense, but before we talk about the defense, we should talk about the things that defend our skin from the elements. God, that was a bad transition. We're going to talk about home field apparel.
a bug spray thing there.
We did not get a new endorsement from sunscreen or something. We are of course talking about home field apparel. The best available vintage inspired t-shirts. They have more than t-shirts. They've got, they've got sweatshirts. They've got, I don't know if they have hats. Do they have hats? I feel like they should have hats. But yeah, we are good friends with them. They are, stocked with some of the best college apparel that you can find on the internet. If you're not an Ohio State fan, they've still got you covered. If you are an Ohio State fan, they have a very deep collection of Ohio State stuff. They're even stepping into the NFL world now. I don't think they have every team, but they have a few teams. I think they debuted with the Colts, but all that to say, if you are just looking for some vintage inspired collegiate apparel, just kind of looking to see what all they've got, just go peruse the site. Some of their stuff at like different, some of the different school stuff, like I think their Tulane stuff is super cool. Their Pitt stuff is super cool. Their Ohio State stuff obviously is super cool. So if you have not yet purchased from Home Field Apparel, use the code meet at midfield for 15% off your first order. It does not work for any order past your first order. They do have a loyalty program, I believe, that you can get rewarded for continuing to purchase after your first order. So they've got that going for you. But yeah, if you have not purchased from Home Field Apparel, use meet at midfield for 15% off your first order. You know, it is, we wear it. We would never, I can't, I was going to say, yeah. We would never sell you something that we don't wear ourselves. That's not true. We check would.
Is right. Yeah. Would. But in this case, we do actually like it. And also, you know, we like the guys. Like Hopefield Connor's a great guy. Like, yep. He's good people. There are brands I buy from that I'm sure, like, I'm sure almost everything you buy is like questionably ethical, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
You were like almost anything you were purchasing, unless you were one of those, like, I'm going to, you know, knit everything myself and raise my chickens on my backyard kind of freaks. Yeah. Everything you're buying, you're eating, you're wearing is probably, you know, questionably sourced. Homefield's not. It's ethically sourced. They're good people. I like working with them. Their quality is great. People management, you know, our friend Taylor Fulton works for them. They're good employers. Like, they're, it's a good company. Like, all the other shit aside, if you just like supporting good companies, good people, they're good people. And the clothes are great too.
Yeah. 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 Maybe that was our best endorsement of them. It's just like, hey, they're pretty good.
Good show. Yeah.
Yeah. You know who else seems pretty good? CJ Hicks. It seems that he has, I think the last podcast we recorded, I think we both kind of just agreed, like, yeah, maybe CJ Hicks is bad. Maybe he heard that and he decided to show us, because it seems like he's finally taken that step and seems like he might be, I don't know, ready to play linebacker at Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see a ton from him in the spring game, which is like the opposite of last year, right? Last year, he like looked sick in the spring game, and then he like looked completely lost on the field. By all accounts, he looks really good in practice this year. Like, he seems to be thriving on the practice field. I think there were a few days where he was running with the ones at linebacker. Like, they had kind of a three-man rotation between him, Sonny, and Cody Simon. That's great, right? It's good to see him stepping forward. I still think his best role is probably a true edge rusher, not like an off-ball linebacker. I'm still a little skeptical to see him do it in a game, just because we heard spring hype before and Jim Knowles has said nice things before, but like, it would make sense, right? Like, year three in the system, year three with the same coordinator, or yeah. No, is that true? Yeah
it's
true.
Year three,
just kidding, that's true. Yeah, I questioned myself for a second. It's year three, the same coordinator. Like, this is when the light should come on. Like, you would hope it would have come on in year two, but considering they, you know, eliminated his position and didn't practice it in the spring and didn't give him anything else to do, and he was just like a legacy employee after a merger who was just like hanging out doing nothing until the checks ran out. It's now that he has a real position and is actually practicing there all the time. It seems like he might be picking it up, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love our mismanaged defense. In hindsight, not even hindsight, it's absolutely remarkable when you really break it down that Ohio State's defense has been as good as it has the past two seasons, given all the bullshit that's gone on behind the scenes with like resisting scheme changes and a position that may or may not exist. And it is fascinating to me that the defense is as good as it is. So hopefully now we will get to see the defense in its final form, along with players that are also good too. I think generally speaking, I'm super excited about the defense.
I agree with that. I mean, it's cool to see them, like, my God, just the number of like talented bodies they have. Like, forget everything else. Just like the depth they've really finally accrued at just about every position. Like, there's still some questions at linebacker, right? Like, obviously you and I love Sonny, but like, he's never played there. CJ Hicks has like barely played linebacker. Like, I still got a couple questions here and there. I'm not pretending it's all fixed and, you know, perfect right now, but like, the secondary, which we're going to talk about here in a second, looks pretty fucking close to perfect. The defensive line has just about everyone back except Mike Hall. I'm getting the sense, like, I like Hero Canoe. I like Caden McDaniel. I think Jason Moore, I know he just said that one. This is, I promise it's not off that one flash play in the spring.
Yeah, right.
I think he's probably ready to step into the rotation. I think both him and Edric Houston could play inside or outside if needed to. Mm-hmm. They're making Jason a defensive tackle. I think if you need someone to get a few reps to give, you know, Kenyatta or Curry a breather on the second team of the defensive end unit, I think that Moore could play alongside Melton. But I really do think, like, the depth they're building up there in the defensive line on the secondary is fucking nasty. Like, those corners, dude. Like, the safeties are great. The corners, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus. Like,
yeah.
By all accounts, Iggy's been dominant all spring, like, to the point where people think he might be better than Burke. You might have three top 50 picks next draft at corner between Hancock, Burke, and Iggy, let alone Jermaine Matthews, who might be better than all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, Jermaine Matthews is just hanging out behind there. That's insane.
Calvin Simpson Hutt looked good too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, it is. And the way that they're recruiting at that position too, like, it is BIA again. Like, that, the whole secondary, we took a few years off, but they are loaded. Like, I think Urban Meyer on the commentary was talking about, like, just how good it is to have, like, lockdown corners that way. Well, he was talking about the defensive line too. Like, if you have a good defensive line and good corners, like, your defense is just fine, because, like, you can just rush the quarterback and then play single coverage and trust your guys to make a play, and they're going to. Like, there's nobody on in the secondary in terms of, like, safety or corner that I genuinely would be, like, concerned in coverage. Like, sincerely, it is.
You have to get to the third unit, like, for me to feel nervous.
Yeah.
Crazy. Like,
not on corner, at least. On corner, at least. Maybe safety would make me a little nervous if they're playing three deep or whatever. But, like, yeah, that, I mean, even the backups at safety are solid. Like, the second team on safety is, like, very good. You got Jahad Carter is a backup. And who else? Oh, Malik Hartford is a backup. Like,
sure.
Yeah. I feel good about that.
McClain is having good reports all spring, and he looked pretty good that spring game. You know, yeah, man. I mean, they're credit to Tim Walton, credit to McCrary, and even some credit to Eliano, but no, rest in peace. that whole secondary looks to me. God forgive me for being an arrogant Ohio State fan here, but I don't think the question is whether or not Ohio State has the best secondary in the country this year. I think clearly they do. The question is, how does it compare to, like, the other recent elite Ohio State secondaries of 2019 and 2016?
You can throw, like, it's longer, but, like, 2002, you could throw that in there too. Like, yeah,
sure.
It's going to be very, very good. And I think where it stands out for me from the 2019 and 2016 ones is purely the depth, because, like,
yes,
I agree. I saw the final product. I don't know what the final product of this is going to look like. This could even look dumb in hindsight too, me saying this, but, like, I agree that probably, like, the corners of, or the 2016 or 2019, secondary of Jeff Okuda, Sean Wade, and was it Denzel Burke was the other one? Or not Denzel Burke, Denzel Ward.
Denzel Ward, yeah.
Like that's probably better. Or no, it was Damon Arnett.
Sorry, I'm thinking of 2016. I misheard you. 2016 was...
That was Ward.
Hooker.
Lattimore and...
Lattimore. Who was still there? Damn, dude, we're old.
Yeah, we are. That's crazy. I mean, that was, like, almost, we're approaching, like, a decade ago. It was, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah. I'll pull it up really quick.
Gary and Conley. That's who I was missing. And then Jordan Fuller.
Sure. Yeah, Jordan Fuller already starting by 2016?
He was. He was.
No, he was the 2019 team, wasn't he?
Was he? Okay, I'm getting those mixed up.
Yeah, he was 2019 then. Safety. Yeah. The 2019 safety.
People are probably screaming at their podcast secondary. At us.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. The 2019 secondary had Jeff Okuda, Damon Arnett, and Sean Wade at corner.
There we go.
They also had, or that was the year Kendall Sheffield left. They had Jordan Fuller at safety. And who was the other safety of that team?
Damon Webb, I think.
Yeah, that could be right. That does sound right, actually. Sure, okay, he was there. And then 2016 had Marshawn Lattimore, Gary and Conley, and Denzel Ward. And then Malik Hooker was one of the safeties. And again, I forget the other safety. Maybe that, no, that would have been Damon Webb, not 2019.
That would have been, right? Damon Webb, yeah.
Who the fuck knows, dude? We're too old. I can't keep track of all this.
So given what you just said, I think the 2016 secondary is the secondary to beat. Just in terms of guys, like Lattimore, Conley, Ward, Hooker, all in the same, not even knowing who the other.
Those three all went top 25 in the draft.
Yeah.
And then the next year, Ward went top five.
Yeah.
That's so stupid. And then the 2019 team had Okuda, Arnett both go top 20. And then Fuller went in the sixth round, but was an immediate impact player. And then again, Sean Wade came back for a year. If he would have gone after that first year, he would have gone day two. So here's the thing. I think there's probably not a Jeff Okuda, a Malik Hooker, a Marshawn Lattimore level superstar in this group. But I think, tell me if I'm crazy here, every single one of these five starters is going to go in the first two rounds or maybe top 75.
Yeah. Yeah. Except like, I think the one thing that you might be forgetting is Caleb Downs, because like,
yeah. Just safety positional value. Not many safeties go top 10, right?
I guess that is true. That is true. You see the safety positional value in like the NFL free agency this year. Like that's kind of the position that kind of got the shaft this year. So yeah, I guess I can see the argument there. But like he is clearly the one that stands out. We didn't even talk about him at all, but like that's like maybe the best player in the nation at his position that you're talking about too. And we're not even talking about him as like a top, you know, 20 pick or something like that. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's kind of what I mean. Just like across the board, all of them are so good. Like you might not have the star power that 2016 had or even 2019, but like even when you get into the depth and stuff too, because inevitably you're going to need the depth, like knowing that Jermaine Matthews is back there, knowing that Jahad Carter and Malik Hartford are back there at safety, you know, you can move Hancock outside. Like it is going to be an absolutely stacked secondary.
Yeah, it's gross. It really is just gross what those guys are going to do. I mean, I'm pumped about it. I'm pumped to see it all shake out and just kind of like see. I mean, obviously, hope they stay healthy. But like you said, they could suffer an injury at corner and be just fine. I don't think I'd blank if they got hurt at corner.
That'd be sad, but.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But safety, I have, I guess, a couple questions. Like, I don't know. Is Jahad Carter going to stay here? Is he going to transfer? I guess that's a risk.
Yeah.
I like Malik Hartford, but he would be obviously a massive step down from either of those two guys.
Yeah.
I guess I'm. And but behind that, yeah, what is there? I don't know. I mean, not a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah, safety depth. Like, if you get an injury or two at safety, you start sweating a little bit. But I guess worst case scenario, you always just move Sonny back.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Or play Hancock at safety full time and bring in Jermaine Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Would also work.
Like, yeah, they have answers, I guess, but not ideal ones, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is the concern. But I, across the board, I am happy about at least the two deep for now at all of those positions. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All in all, I'm feeling good after the spring game that we didn't really take much into. You can't really take much away from just like one isolated scrimmage. But yeah, it is what it is. I think we're going to jump over to the premium podcast and we're going to talk about the portal a little bit. And the Ohio State basketball team, men's basketball team, has been doing some stuff. So, We will talk about that too. But thank you for joining us. If you want to listen to the premium section of our podcast, you can subscribe to meetatmidfield.com and it will be sent right to you. So yeah, we will see you in just a bit.